The addictive roguelike game Balatro has become one of the biggest hits of the year, mixing elements of poker and solitaire into a fiendish experience. And now my life is ruined because it's coming to mobile thanks to Apple Arcade. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade. And you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
I think the biggest misconception about my work is that it's difficult. They let you have the experience of overcoming difficulty, but I actually don't think they're really that difficult deep down. I think when people look at Baby Steps, maybe they think, here's another rage game. I hear that a little bit. I'd encourage people to look a little deeper. There's quite a lot going on in that game. All of the rageful stuff is opt-in. You know, it's optional.
Sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter, our video game industry interview show. I'm Naomi Jackson. Hair pulling, teeth grinding, throw your mouse type games. I'm about to talk to Bennett Foddy all about them. Before we jump into that, here's what's making the news on Walkthrough, Sifter's news podcast.
Hi, I'm Gianni Di Giovanni.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 21st of December. It's our last episode for the year.
Hollow Knight Silk Song devs Team Cherry have announced a DLC and it'll be free next year.
Reports are that Naughty Dog staff are crunching as part of Intergalactic the Heretic Prophet.
Plus, Aussie Indies Massive Monster have launched a co-working space and fund in Victoria to support local games.
Plus, all the coolest games you can find this week, plus a bunch that you should go look back for that are made in Australia.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
If you've ever screamed at your computer, this guy is probably the reason why. He's the creator of fantastically difficult games such as Quop, Getting Over It, and Baby Steps. Hello, Bennett Foddy.
Hi, it's nice to be with you.
Bennett's games are designed to make you think and have been a hit with players online as you watch countless streamers try and fail and finally, after much struggle, succeed. So you're back in Australia and we'll be at Acme in Melbourne on the 14th of January. How does it feel being back?
I'm enjoying the hot weather, visiting family. It's nice to be back here. It hasn't been often enough over the last few years.
And you're in an interesting position in regards to Australian-made games. Like, what do you think of the Aussie game development scene as someone who's both an insider and an outsider?
Yeah, I mean, I left in 2007 or something like that, and there's been games made in Australia back to as far as the 80s, but I feel like it's really blown up, especially kind of indie games has really kind of taken off since after I left. And so when I'm back here now, actually catching up with game developers who I've met, you know, abroad at conferences and events and in New York. And it's sort of been incredible to see all of the stuff that's been going on here. A little bit jealous for how cool the scene is, actually.
Have you been to like any of the conventions here before, like PAX or anything like that?
I came to Free Play one year, I think to 2018. I haven't actually been back down to Melbourne often enough to be able to do that. It's a shame to say I've never been to a PAX of any kind. So maybe that's one for the future.
Yeah. Is there a topic of discussion in your Acme talk that you're most excited to dive into in front of the Aussie public?
I think we're going to be just talking about sort of the long arc of games that I've been making since 2006, leading through, of course, to my collaboration with Gabe Cazillo and Maxi Bock on Baby Steps, which just came out, of course, trying to look for some through lines and sort of like a story that can help to explain how we got to be making something that's a little weird, a little bit a little bit out in left field.
Let's unpack your most recent game, Baby Steps, for people who haven't played it yet. What can players expect when they sit down to play?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, Baby Steps is a tough game for me to sum up in a nutshell, but here we go. So Baby Steps is a game where you are a unemployed fail son who's spirited away to a mysterious land where he needs to go for a long hike in search of a toilet. It's a little bit on the silly side, but I think as you're playing it, you uncover that sort of deeper, there's something a little bit deeper going on. There's a lot for people to discover. The gameplay owes something historically to one of my early games, Quop, in that you walk by manually placing the feet of the character in order to make him walk one step at a time. So it's an unusual one. So we normally make it pretty easy for people to travel around in open world games, or fast travel, or use vehicles, or just push a joystick in a direction. And we make you take every step manually. So that's what Baby Steps is all about.
Yeah, so you would say that it's kind of like a commentary on those open world games.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's sort of a love letter to those games a little bit. You know, I think we really loved all of the Assassin's Creeds and Far Cry and the Zelda games and so on. And so there's love in there, but it's also a little bit trying to invert a lot of the things that those games are doing and the trends that have been happening in those games over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, as well as the open world game genre, it's also the Fodian game genre. Like, you're known for your challenging, sometimes frustrating games. Can you tell me a bit about why difficulty and challenge is an important tool in interactive narratives like this?
But the way I think about that is that in video games, there's a fundamental risk when you're playing a video game that at some point you kind of wonder why you're doing it. You know, so if I'm playing a game that that allows me to kind of save and restore, or save scum, as we sometimes call it, just be able to kind of reverse all my mistakes or rewind or whatever it is, there's a sense in which successes and failures don't matter much because the success is guaranteed, right? In a world where you can't possibly fail, then the successes don't mean very much. So my approach to that has been, I want the events that happen in playing games myself and for my players of games I'm working on, I want those events to feel real and to have stakes and to feel like there's consequences. And it's really more with that in that we lay out how to do these games. It's like I want it to be that if you walked a long way in the wrong direction, you have to walk all the way back. If you fell down a hill, you have to climb back up. That's it, all in service of making the world feel more real and to make the events in the game feel like real things that happened to you rather than things that maybe sort of happened and then were undone when you reloaded a save. So that's where we're coming from, I think.
Yeah, I love that. Would you say you like seeing difficulty used in other games? Do we have enough difficult games out there?
There's a lot of difficult games, but they don't necessarily approach it in the way that I was talking about. You know, I mean, there are games that are just titanically difficult, but where you can, like, if every time something goes slightly wrong, you can just load up an old save. And you know, it's not to say that I don't like those games. I mean, I deep love for some of the harder games out there. I'm not very good at them, but you know, that's the kind of the thing that I grew up on. You know, kid of the 80s and 90s, playing arcade games, which tended to be incredibly difficult. Playing some of the early computer and console games, they also tended to be difficult more than anything else as a way to stretch the experience to be a little longer than it otherwise would be. And then their trend toward making things smoother and easier is something that came along later as we started to spend more and more money on making games longer and longer and more detailed. So little bit, it's just a sort of a, it's an acquired taste. And I think that people are still into it today. I mean, if you look at Hollow Knight Silksong, one of the most titanically successful games of the last year, but maybe of all time, is notoriously intensely difficult. So it's not, even though it might have been out of fashion amongst game designers, it's definitely not out of fashion amongst players at the moment.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I would say games like Silksong are almost like addictively difficult. Like I can't stop trying and trying to get it complete. Did you know that getting over it is a comfort game for some people? I saw when I was looking online.
So that wasn't expected. I thought I was making something that was incredibly annoying and like a trial that people would get through and then be like, ah, thank goodness I got to the end. And for some people it is that, to be clear. I mean, and for me, playing it was like that. But there's a certain set of players who are just like, yeah, no, I want to go again. I want to go again. I want to go again, to the point where it's something that they kind of play rhythmically without even thinking about it. They're beating it in 5 minutes or less, maybe sometimes much less. And that becomes like knitting or something like that, something that they're doing, for comfort, just as a sort of an enjoyable activity to do with their hands. And I love that. I respect it. I'm never going to be that good at it, unfortunately, myself. But it goes to show how when you make a video game, you're really, it's not really a complete form of work, of artwork in a certain way, because it's completed by the ways that people play it. And it goes to show in Getting Over It, such a good example, because you can play it in a sort of a stressed out, incremental, like very, very slow progress, you know, succeeding and failing type way. You can play it in this comfort way. You can play it in a speed running way, trying to kind of find optimizations. And people have done all of these things. There's streamers who play it as a way of like provoking emotional reactions that then they can perform for their fans, and the fans are kind of playing the game in a way just by watching those reactions. So games are completed by the ways that the players choose to play them. And it's been an education in that for me to watch people playing Getting Over It in particular, which is played in so many different ways.
I love that you play your own games quite a bit as well. I saw that you did a dev challenge for mm-hmm. Baby Steps, in which people had to complete a certain like list of tasks in a certain amount of time. What inspired you to create that challenge?
Yeah, it's a funny story. You know, we had so much level design to make and so much level design to test. And the level design's done by me and by Gabe Casillo, and we were finding it quite difficult to test it in a kind of a appropriately critical way. You know, you design an area of the map with holding it in mind that the players will just do exactly what you expect, and then you try to do it yourself, and sure enough, it works great. And of course, we're using playtesters as well to kind of validate stuff, but we needed a way of like just checking things we're ready for playtesting a lot of the time without going crazy from having to kind of play our own work. So we got into the habit of trying to change it up by doing races within the game. So we would lay out a bunch of checkpoints and see who could do it most quickly and find the most optimal route. And that tended to take us across parts of the map that were maybe not fully fleshed out, or maybe had holes in them or bugs or whatever. And it was all good. But yeah, you, as a person working on a 6-year game, you're constantly looking for ways to see it with fresh eyes. And we managed to do that by doing these races. So we loved that way of playing it. And it was just something that we wanted to be able to share with the players as a sort of a suggestion.
I thought it was really interesting, considering I heard a talk that you kind of gave over somebody doing a speed run, where you talked about how speed running can kind of be pushing the limits of a game. And I would say that Baby Steps is a really difficult game to speed run when you're not doing something like this challenge. So
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a navigational challenge as much as anything else, although I will say that the people who have done the fastest kind of glitchy speed runs were just looking for like things that they could exploit or break in the game. That's also part of speed running, so everybody's got a different approach, but I'm most interested to watch glitchless speed runs of Baby Steps to see what kinds of things people came up with, because it's always the case that we had stuff that we thought was going to be completely impossible to climb or to traverse, and then sure enough there's some speed runner who's just figured out that you can do it.
Was there anything that happened when you were making Baby Steps that people would be surprised to know about, like maybe an element that was really difficult to develop?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we were co-developing, Gabe was co-developing the walking system at the same time as we were having to build out the map. And so one of the things that's sort of not, maybe is not like totally normal in games, is that we were still finding out that we could do things with the character that we didn't expect that we would be able to do when we'd already kind of done quite a lot of the map. So, you know, we had all of this stuff where what we thought was an impossible challenge, we'd then find out that we could make him jump with the right combination of inputs, little hop, little jump. And then that would inspire more level design. So now we have some challenges where you have to jump, or we have challenges where you have to slide and then kind of come to a halt without falling over a cliff. So when you're working in the kind of world of like a complicated physics game, like Baby Steps or like Getting Over It, I guess, sometimes there's mechanics hidden in there that you didn't intend, that are just kind of implications of the world as it, and as a designer, it's just different because you're doing almost a process of discovery rather than by intentionally putting kind of actions into the world. And so, yeah, that's for us has been a little bit of like, there's still stuff that is surprising.
Are you working on anything at the moment?
Working on recovering from working on a video game for 6 years. That's something that nobody should do, obviously, but so many of us do. We're going to work on the long and slow road toward figuring out what's next. We have to get new inspirations, make new prototypes. We'll be doing game jams. We'll be gathering up ideas. And then very gradually moving toward whatever the next project might be. But yeah, no, at the moment it's a nice, well-earned and thankfully Australian summer break for me.
Definitely. And Getting Over It was in the Museum of Modern Art for a while in New York. Very impressive.
Yeah, it's actually been collected by the Museum of Modern Art into their permanent collection in the design collection.
Yeah, it was great to read about it on the website. It's like kind of an experiment of like, yeah, testing those types of gamers that you kind of directed the game at. Is there any plans to try something like that with Baby Steps? Like,
oh, you mean to put it in a museum?
Yeah.
I would be very honored if anybody was interested in doing that, for sure. It was lovely to see Getting Over It in that context in the Museum of Modern Art. We only had one person throw the mouse that was attached to it, so it didn't make them too angry in that context, but I did get an email saying there'd been a security incident as somebody had gotten frustrated and had thrown the mouse. But yeah, no, they resolved that pretty quickly, and they're pretty much on top of that stuff at the Museum of Modern Art.
That kind of does like exactly what they like have it in the museum for. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I only wish we had a photograph of the person who was losing their rag and chucking the mouse. I think that could have become part of the artwork.
Yeah, you can put that in the museum.
Exactly.
What is the biggest misconception about your work?
That's a good question. I think the biggest misconception about my work is that it's difficult. Because I do play around with frustration, and I play around with making things difficult that are usually assumed to be easy. But I actually think that if I look over the kind of long arc of games that I've made, in my head, I think they're pretty accessible to a kind of a non-core audience. definitely including my contribution to Baby Steps, but going like even Getting Over It and even Quop, those are all games that kind of regular people can play. Feeling like it's difficult is part of the experience of those games, but I actually don't think that if I were to compare it to Sekiro or Bloodborne, Ninja Gaiden, those sorts of games, I don't think I've ever really required like really good reflexes, because I don't have good reflexes myself, and I haven't required much memorization because I'm not good at that and I don't enjoy it myself. And I haven't, yeah, there's all this stuff I haven't required sort of deep strategization or logic or anything like that, because I don't enjoy that myself. So, you know, I'm pretty casual as a gamer, and I think that my games they let you have the experience of overcoming difficulty, but I actually don't think they're really that difficult deep down.
I love that. Is there anything that I haven't asked about that you want people to know?
I wonder. I mean, I think when people look at Baby Steps, maybe they think, oh, here's another rage game. I hear that a little bit. I'd encourage people to look a little deeper. There's quite a lot going on in that game. You know, all of the rageful stuff is opt in, you know, it's optional. And so, yeah, no, that's all I'd say about that.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for your time, and all the best for what's next. You can check out Bennett at his talk at ACME on the 14th of January.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
This has been Lightmap, Sifter's interview podcast. My name's Naomi Jackson. Thank you so much for joining me. Please support the show by giving us a rating and review on your favorite podcast player, or head to our socials to show your support and share our work with your friends. Sifter is produced by myself, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Kat John, Kyle Poletto, Chris Button, and Adam Christo. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni DiGiovanni is Sifter's executive producer and script editor. Thanks to Audio Technica Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. We'll catch you on the next episode of Lightmap.